I'm Dan Pierce, and this is Pressure Cooker.
I said I will never wear the hijab or give up my mini skirts. Never.
It's the outrageous story of two misfits living on the fringes and how they became the central players in a sprawling terror investigation.
We just hung out and played video games and smoked weed and did what we do, you know.
Pressure Cooker is available on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Galloway, and this is The Current Podcast. You know that TikTok and Instagram are awash with all sorts of advice, including advice about diet and nutrition.
This diet was voted the best diet of 2023.
I try to lose weight, but every diet focused on calorie counting and portion control, which works for some people, but I needed something
liquid chlorophyll. If you've been following along with our daily food logs, you've seen that I've been adding this to my water in the morning.
Celery acts as a diuretic, neutralizes body acidity, and helps maintain.
There's a lot about how to diet and lose weight, but there is also pushback to all that advice.
We tend to have such binary thinking when it comes to food. We only have two categories in our minds, good and bad, with nothing in between.
Diet culture really teaches us that nourishment comes from a certain type of food, and that everything else,
there's a much gentler way to change what you're eating, to change how your body feels without using those nasty words should and shouldn't, can't, and cannot.
Well, now a new investigation by the Washington Post has found that the food industry is also embracing some of this anti-diet messaging for its own purposes. That industry is lobbying dietitian influencers and in some cases sponsoring their content on social media. As part of our series on wellness, Well Founded, I'm joined by Caitlin Gilbert, data reporter with The Washington Post. Caitlin, good morning.
Good morning, Matt.
Why did you want to look into this, the anti-diet messages on social media?
This was something we stumbled on from our first investigation. We were looking at online dietitians on social media. We noticed that a lot of the content was falling under this umbrella of folks talking about things like intuitive eating, health at every size, general anti-diet ideas. And it was something we were definitely interested in kind of following up on further. And so when we started reporting a bit more, we heard from other dietitians, many of whom were not online. And then additionally, hearing a lot of those messages being echoed by, you know, companies like General Mills being used to promote their products and push back against regulation. So that was sort of the impetus.
We heard some of the examples there, but can you explain a little bit more about how this, what we're calling anti-diet messaging, plays out on TikTok and Instagram? What are the things that are being said?
We did a more kind of a comprehensive look at this because, you know, this was newer to us as well as reporters. So we looked at folks using different hashtags like intuitive eating, like anti-diet, like health at every size. A lot of these things, you know, sometimes are used interchangeably, sometimes are used more specifically. But broadly, right, people are talking about kind of resisting a lot of the really toxic fad diets, diet culture more broadly, the sort of obsession with thinness, unhealthy weight stigma. A lot of the anti-diet movement, right, centers a more healthy relationship with food. And so that was sort of the broad kind of theme we were seeing. And then when we took a look at those posts, you know, a lot of people were experiencing various ranges of things, right? Like really severe eating disorders, talking about their experiences with those things, talking about severe diets, experiences with weight loss and struggles with weight loss, and how they were kind of growing out of those experiences. But at the same time, you know, we noticed that some folks were also saying essentially that chronic diseases like things like diabetes and fatty liver, kidney disease couldn't be caused by nutritional choices and sort of removing that connection entirely. That was something dietitians had come to us and said they were concerned about, maybe how extreme some of the messaging, particularly on social media, was getting.
When you talked about hashtags on social media, I mean, one of them is derail the shame. And the shame is about feeling bad about what you eat, right?
Yes. So derail the shame is something that people sort of were generally using to talk about removing shame around food and shame around eating different types of food. But we also saw that hashtag specifically being used by General Mills in their presentation of what they were calling novel food shame research and looking at the effects of food shame. And so at big conferences like FinCE, where lots of dietitians attend, nutritionists attend, this was the language that they were also using.
What was happening at that conference? And what's the role of the food industry in helping to shape the conversation? Because the conference plays a huge part in this, right?
Yeah. So FinCE is this annual conference, very, very large conference around nutrition generally. The Academy of Dietetics and Nutrition sponsors this conference every year. And Many, many different food companies show up at Vinci every year in a sort of like expo style floor events. And General Mills was actually having a really large session specifically to debut this novel food shaming research, where they essentially talked about how they conducted a survey where they were saying that food shaming was sort of the root of all kinds of various problems in American society. And they even kind of made that link to regulation around food. And so this was sort of like the first indication to us that the food industry was doing something around co-opting this language. And we saw this again and again with big food companies using that language to push back against regulation. On top of that, you know, General Mills has hired a ton of lobbyists, spent millions of dollars to push back against any kind of regulation, notably the kind of labeling around foods. So even something like, you know, the current version suggests putting labels that would say that a food is high in added sugars, or a food is high in sodium, or a food is high in saturated fats, which are kind of the common categories the FDA is interested in labeling. They would call that food shaming from General Mills' perspective. And so this is where we were starting to get concerned about how messages that might be really helpful for folks online are now being co-opted for a for-profit purpose.
What's the relationship between General Mills, and you talk a lot about General Mills, and those influencers online?
So General Mills has sort of done kind of a multi-sort of pronged approach to this. So they obviously at these conferences, they're interfacing directly with dietitians. We found that they've given personalized gifts to some dietitians. So you'll see some of this on social media under that Derail the Shame hashtag, where dietitians will share kind of like personalized Cheerios boxes or cereals boxes with their names on it. And then they're parroting that language that General Mills is sort of preaching at these different conferences around the country. And then on top of that, they're also directly paying dietitians, some of whom are anti-diet dietitians by their own right, to promote their products. And so you'll see paid partnership, hashtag sponsored for General Mills products like cereals or sugary snacks on social media like TikTok or Instagram.
How is this different than the ongoing relationship that food companies have had with food science and nutrition research? Because that's existed for a long time, right?
Yeah, we mentioned in the story too that General Mills is also just directly funded the research to sort of show that their cereals in particular are nutritious. They're ready to eat cereals. This is something that the food industry in general has done for many, many, many years. We see this as sort of like a evolution of the strategy. A lot of the anti-diet messaging is really effective, very popular, very compelling. And so the food industry we see as actually taking this messaging to further support their kind of bottom line and push back against regulation that is really a long time coming.
And is that why you see it happening now? Because that regulation is coming, but also because there's this larger conversation around what people call ultra-processed food, for example?
I think it's both, right? I mean, again, I would say front of package labeling has been something that's been an ongoing fight in the U.S. for years and years now. But now we have the FDA saying they're really going to actually do something, and legislation in Congress has been introduced to bolster that. So it seems more and more likely that that regulation will happen. But again, the food industry is going to use its whole weight to push back against it.
This article got a lot of attention and some pretty vigorous reaction from a lot of dietitians, as you could probably imagine. The phrase hatchet job was used by a Canadian dietitian, Abby Langer, who took to Instagram to say this.
If the Washington Post has no faith in the ethics of registered dietitians, then who is the public supposed to go to for nutrition information? Naturopaths? Unregulated nutritionists and nutritional therapists? No. The majority of registered dietitians are helping people live healthier, happier lives. We are the most qualified profession in the world to counsel individuals on what and how they should eat.
You analyzed the social media posts of a group of 68 dietitians on social media. Is it possible to generalize about a profession based on what you found?
So the 68 dietitians we looked at are meant to represent the online influencers that had the biggest followings, right? This is not meant to represent by any means the full profession. There, I think, is a small percentage of dietitians that is even on any of these platforms to begin with. So we designed that universe to represent the sort of growing online presence of dietitians on social media, some of whom have millions of followers.
What do you make of the fact that you've been accused of doing a hatchet job, that you're targeting people who are anti-diet when there's all sorts of influencers who promote diet culture, calorie counting, supplements, green juice, et cetera?
I mean, part of the reason we did this follow-up story was registered dietitians, some of whom are quoted in the story, reached out to us after our first story to say, you need to be addressing this anti-diet movement. There are dietitians sort of in the field who maybe aren't influencers online, who are working in dietetics, doing nutrition research, doing metabolism research, who we're getting increasingly concerned by sort of the lack of nuance and some of the more extreme messages from their peers online, concerned about people making really blanket statements about nutrition, like chronic diseases don't have anything to do with nutritional choices, or totally deny the connection between excess body fat and disease at a time when many diseases are at record highs in the US right now. And so I think some dietitians are also concerned by what their peers are doing online.
What would you want? I mean, given to Abby Langer's point, you know, the flood of information about this, what would you want people to take from this in terms of how to interpret what they're seeing online?
Yeah, I think the best advice is actually when I spoke to one of the leaders of ASDA, which owns the Health at Every Size trademark. She's a registered dietitian herself, and she sort of was saying registered dietitians or anyone shouldn't be making any kind of blanket advice about something as really personal as health and nutrition. And so when navigating social media, I think it's really important, one, to be skeptical, but if you're hearing something that's very broad, very general, it's important to get that personalized advice from individualized, you know, healthcare provider, as opposed to just trusting inherently what you're seeing on social media.
Caitlin, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Matt.
Caitlin Gilbert is a data reporter with The Washington Post. Vinci Choi is a private practice dietitian and certified intuitive eating counselor based in Calgary, as well as the founder of Weight Inclusive Dietitians in Canada. Vinci, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
What was your response when you saw what The Washington Post was reporting on here?
I think, you know, a lot of my colleagues have written very well about this. And I think I kind of agree a bit with sort of the clip that you played from Abby Langer, that there was a feeling that dietitians are being targeted here. And, you know, it's interesting how there's this frame of, you know, it's the food industry co-opting anti-diet messaging, but how it's sort of come out in the report feels like dietitians being targeted, right? Like in addition to two joint investigations done by the Post and the Examination on the same data set of influencer dietitians, there was also another article in 2022 on food companies sponsoring the FENCE conference that Caitlin was just mentioning. So yes, I can see the argument that as health providers, maybe, yeah, dietitians should be held to a higher standard, but why are we only reporting on dietitians when doctors or other healthcare providers are also attending conferences sponsored by pharmaceutical companies or other industry people?
If we talk about dietitians, I mean, how concerned are you that the food industry seems to be looking for a way to capitalize on an anti-diet movement, to use it to promote their own products, to say that these cereals are healthy for you and we're going to talk about how you shouldn't feel any shame for what you're eating and, by the way, eat this?
I think it is concerning, but I think there is nuance to it as well. I think people have this image of, you know, dietitians working at a clinic, doling out meal plans, teaching Canada's food guide. Like, that's not what we do, right? Yes, there are dietitians working in clinical settings, but there's also dietitians working in public health, working for sports teams, working in research and academia, and dietitians who do health communication. So this is their income. And I think this framing that, you know, big food is co-opting this messaging is a little bit insulting. Like, I do trust that my colleagues who do this work are being selective about the brands that they're choosing to work with and also crafting messages that align with the evidence and their values as dietitians.
Can I ask you more about that? I mean, as somebody who's practicing in Alberta, what are the rules around things like conflict of interest and paid endorsements so that the people who are reading or receiving the information know that it's coming from you, not from somebody who's paying you? And if they are paying you, that you have to disclose it. What are those rules?
So kind of like you alluded to, in Canada, dietitians, and I think a lot of other health professionals as well, are regulated provincially. So being from Alberta, I'm regulated by the College of Dietitians of Alberta, and through them, they have a code of ethics and with specific sections on advertising and conflict of interest. And then from there, like in more recent years, I would say maybe less than 10 years ago, they also published some social media practice guidelines that kind of build upon upon the sections on conflict of interest. And so if it's helpful for me to even kind of quote what they've written here in their social media guidelines, they talk about, you know, especially for disclosures, like dietitians must also disclose all affiliations, partnerships, sponsorships, employment, and conflicts of interest open, clearly, and inconspicuously, and should catch viewers / readers' attention. And they also link to sort of some other guidelines.
Do you think people are doing that uniformly? I mean, not just in Alberta, but broadly, if you take a look at the field and what's being said on social media?
I think, unfortunately, it hasn't been consistent. I mean, as, you know, kind of that first investigation from the Washington Post sort of indicates, this is unfortunately not happening consistently. And I think also, like, the guidelines could perhaps be more strict in terms of, okay, like, what does openly, clearly, and inconspicuously mean? Does it mean that it has to be that the person is saying it in the video? Does it mean that it's like a caption in the video? I think there are still some lack of clarity that perhaps could be made more clear by the regulators.
I just wonder, and part of this is about ethics, right? Whether it's ethical for somebody to take money from a company that, for example, might make sugary cereal and then say on social media with a hashtag that you shouldn't be ashamed about eating whatever you want to eat. Is that ethical?
I mean, I think there are like a couple parts to this, right? Like one, like I think there are going to be some people who argue that dietitians or other health professionals should not be working with industry to begin with. And I think that is a valid argument. And I know there are dietitians who do make that choice, you know, like even if they are on social media, to not do any sponsored posts. And I think even within the code of ethics and the social media guidelines, what they do talk about is like either avoiding or disclosing. So perhaps with enough disclosure, like that is still falling within, or that is still addressing or mitigating that conflict of interest. I also want to say, like, I think there's definitely a bias here that's kind of coming up around food and this idea of good food and bad food, and like, or the idea that processed food or ultra processed foods are bad, and therefore, like, dietitians shouldn't be recommending them.
Are they not bad? I mean, isn't there not a litany of information studies, what have you, to show that they're bad?
I don't think it's as straightforward as saying, like, we should not eat ultra-processed or processed foods. Processed foods exist because they do serve a purpose. I think it would be very unrealistic and elitist to say that we should not eat ultra-processed foods. People eat ultra-processed foods or processed foods because of time, because of access, because of cooking skills or lack thereof. There are lots of reasons why people choose processed and ultra-processed foods. And by telling people, no, you shouldn't eat them, that has the potential to not be particularly helpful or, worst case scenario, harmful, and kind of like increase that risk of disordered eating. And so I think it's not as black and white as it's being made out to be. And I think that's why some of these dietitians are saying the things that they're saying. Like, these are things that I would say as a dietitian, that like people choose processed foods for a lot of different reasons. And it's okay to still include them, because it's not realistic to tell someone to not eat any processed foods at all. And so I think in a lot of cases, these are things that dietitians are already saying, because it's not very black and white. Like, when we're talking about nutrition, it's not just, you know, what's happening at the cellular level. Like, maybe that is black and white. But when we're talking about humans eating food, we're talking about psychology, we're talking about sociology, we're talking about access, economics. There's lots of factors that are being at play here. And it's not as simple as saying, don't eat this. This is bad.
If we were talking about sponsored content, what's your own attitude toward that? If you don't mind me asking, I mean, do you provide sponsored content? Do you take sponsored content? Do you promote sponsored content?
I don't. And I mean, it's partly because I don't have the millions of followers. Like, I only have like 6,000 or something on Instagram. So
that's more than me, but continue.
And I just like don't really have the time. I think if it was a brand that I supported or used already, and it was like a messaging that I aligned with, yes, I would. And of course, like, I would disclose that to my followers.
What would you say? This is the question that I asked Caitlin as well. What would you say to people who are just inundated with all of these bits of information, often conflicting on social media about food and diet, and they're trying to figure out what the right thing to do is and what they should eat and what they shouldn't eat and how much. What would you say to them about how they should navigate through this, given what we've been talking about?
I know, like, this is so hard. And I think dietitians on social media do it to make nutrition information more accessible, because it's not easy to get to see a dietitian, right? If you're seeing a private practice dietitian, there's a cost involved. And even if there isn't a cost involved, most are working daytime hours. So it's hard. And unfortunately, it's hard to capture nuance about nutrition in a 60-second or even less, like, TikTok reel, or even like a longer YouTube video. So I think recognizing that it is hard, and that if you do have a way to access a dietitian to help you kind of get that individualized support, like similar to what Caitlin said, I would take advantage of it. And I think remembering that it is important to be critical and also be curious about things that maybe push up against some of our own beliefs and biases.
Vinci, I'm really glad to talk to you. It's an important part of this conversation. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Vinci Choi is a private practice dietitian, certified intuitive eating counselor based in Calgary, as well as the founder of Weight Inclusive Dietitians in Canada.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart McLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share two hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
Alison Thompson is a bioethicist and associate professor at the University of Toronto. She's been listening into our conversations. Alison, good morning to you.
Morning to you.
What do you make of what the Post uncovered about these ties, such as they are, between the food industry and dietitians who also happen to be social media influencers?
Well, you know, I think it's a bit of deja vu, really. And Vinci's right. This is shining a spotlight on one particular healthcare profession where this is happening. But this is something that, you know, we've been looking at how to prevent the undue influence from commercial actors on physicians for years. And we know that very similar marketing strategies are being used between big food and big pharma. It's interesting to look at it in this particular context, but the broader issue is really about what are we doing in Canada to really look at this issue, because commercial actors do shape very much our ability to make choices and our health and the equity of the population health overall.
Are you surprised to hear about these conferences that Caitlin Gilbert was talking about, the way that she writes about them, nutrition conferences that happen to have major sponsors from, you know, the food industry, and people can line up and, you know, go down a slide into a bowl of Cheetos and that kind of thing like that? Are you surprised to hear about that? Seems a very obvious way to try to shape behavior and shape influence.
Yeah, you know, those large healthcare conferences are very often sponsored by industry partners. So I'm not surprised at all. That's sort of the norm, I think, for those large congresses where you have a large group of healthcare professionals. They're very expensive. The societies or colleges themselves can't really support the cost of that. They need those industry sponsors to have those. But, you know, we're not doing a great job at looking at the issues around undue influence that happens at those types of meetings. But there's, you know, many other ways in which they are influencing, you know, endorsements from dietitians or prescribing behavior on the part of physicians.
Vinci talked about what the regulations may be in Alberta. As you understand it across this country, I mean, how consistent are the rules about how dietitians should handle paid content and sponsorships in terms of what they're talking about online?
So the regulatory colleges for dietitians across the country all speak to this issue around conflict of interest. And they're very clear that a dietitian should not be personally profiting or taking money from a company that, you know, if the public were to know, or a reasonable person could look at it, that you could, you know, suspect that there is some undue influence or introducing some kind of bias there. So I think it's very clear in all the codes of ethics and practice standards across the country that this is not okay. And, you know, some of them are more specific. For example, British Columbia, they have very explicit guidelines for marketing and things like that. But endorsements are definitely flagged as a very problematic area. And they will distinguish between you're welcome to recommend a product, but if you take money for it, then it's an endorsement. And then that's a very clear conflict of interest.
Is it just about money, or is it also, what did Caitlin talk about, the you know, the personalized box of cereal with your face on it or something like that? That there could be other ways to shape behavior.
Absolutely. So in the, you know, physician space, you know, we're looking at these kinds of issues with big pharma, it's called transfer of value. So that could be a pen, it could be a meal, it could be continuing education, it could be an actual fee for a talk that you give. In this case, you know, we don't really see physicians shilling for drug companies in this kind of way anymore, but certainly it used to happen. But I think we're just seeing a healthcare profession that is just starting to deal with this, and, you know, partly because of social media. And, you know, it could speak to an issue about the fact that dietitians are not paid well enough.
Well, Vinci talked about it as well. This is part of, in some ways, how people make a living.
Yeah. And so I think that's a bigger issue. That's about, you know, inequities across in pay in for healthcare professions that are dominated by women. We know that they're paid worse. So there could be a bigger issue there, but that does not necessarily mean that this is okay.
How successful do you think the food industry has been at shaping our ideas of what we should and shouldn't be eating?
You know, I do think that the relationship between commercial actors around, you know, big food conglomerates, or big sugar, whatever it is, they are having a very large impact on research, on healthcare provider behavior, and ultimately they are shaping patient choices, which we know down the road will impact population health overall. So I don't think you can underestimate the influence that these commercial actors are having.
So what should we do about that then? I mean, these are big companies. They have a lot of money and they have clearly a lot of influence as well. I mean, and it's not just lobbying lawmakers and trying to sponsor their own studies. It goes beyond that. So what are we supposed to do about that to understand how people can trust what they're reading and get the best advice possible?
I mean, there's not one answer to that question. There's many things that can be done, both on the regulatory side, on demanding more transparency, on the regulatory colleges actually managing these conflicts more actively rather than waiting until someone lodges a complaint with the college to react to it. But also, you know, the bigger issue, particularly around the funding of research, is in Canada, we are seeing a serious contracture of research funding from the federal government. So we are asking universities to turn to industry partners more and more to support research programs. And we know very clearly that that does introduce bias, even when there are very clear guidelines about, you know, industry may provide the money, but they don't have anything to do with the design of the study. Mm. It doesn't actually matter. We know that industry-funded research tends to have more positive outcomes.
Do you see this just finally as a continuum of the conversations that we have, it seems like on a regular basis, around misinformation on the internet? We started in talking about social media and influencers on social media and hashtags being applied. Is this part of that misinformation conversation?
I think so. You know, I think that it's also about the integrity of the people on social media and the fact that it's very hard to judge that, even if they do disclose a paid endorsement. I think you're putting the onus on the consumer or the patient to do the due diligence there. And it's a buyer beware situation, whether you're going to consume this information or not. You know, I think we can be doing a lot better in terms of forcing healthcare providers and industry to take more responsibility for the messages that they're putting out there.
Allison, good to talk to you about this. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Allison Thompson is a bioethicist at the University of Toronto.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.